It's all yours.
All right. Do we reset this? Or
yes, I would.
Okay. So I have a tendency to go long. Good morning. My name is Michelle Reba. I'm a research hydrologist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Agricultural Research Service. I'm the lead scientist for the Delta Water Management Research Unit. Our mission is the preservation of water quantity and water quality for ag. So all we do is water, but I'm going to talk about carbon today. So a little shift in topic for me, and we're going to shift as a group away from Arizona into the humid Mid-South. I'd like to take a moment to recognize my co-authors. Bryant Fong is a former master's student of mine. Dr. Tina Gray Teague, thank you for joining us, Tina. Dr. Adviento Borbi and Dr. Runko from the University of Arkansas. So we're going to look at U.S. Mid-South cotton ecosystem respiration. We'll look at some ET. We'll look at some GPP values in a field in northeastern Arkansas. Why are we focusing on respiration? Cropland accounts for about 12% of global land area. Carbon cycling in cropland can significantly affect the global carbon balance. Of all land use types, CO2 from cropland to the atmosphere are really considered the highest and account for about 25% of CO2 released globally from human sources. So we really have a great potential for carbon storage in croplands. Our main objective is to improve our understanding of carbon cycling. We want to improve our understanding of the mechanisms that control ecosystem respiration at the field scale using current varieties in undercurrent conditions. We're going to do that using eddy covariance. Eddy covariance is a micrometeorological tool. It's the most direct and defensible method to measure field scale trace gases. It's an integrated field measure. What these cartoons here on the top right and the bottom right indicate is that as air moves across a particular field, it takes on certain characteristics. You put sensors, that doesn't really work very well, here, and those sensors are able to measure the characteristics of those eddies as they move along. And when we say measure, we're measuring them at a very fast response. We're collecting this data. Eddy covariance is usually between 10 and 20 hertz. The data that I'm going to show you today is 20 hertz data, so 20 points of information every second, and several points of information. As you might imagine, that collects pretty quickly. This is best done in ideal conditions, flat, homogeneous terrain, which is what we in eastern Arkansas have a great deal of, right? So it's flat, and if it's not flat enough, we like to flatten it a little bit more by precision leveling. Often, eddy covariance can underestimate fluxes, and like any system, there are gaps in the data that need to be filled. This is what our instrumentation looks like. The business end of this is basically just a met station, right? The business end in the red circle, this pointer doesn't work very well, are the two pieces that we really need. Everything else is just what we use to measure the energy balance. So the claw-like device is a three-dimensional sonic anemometer. We'll understand why breaking the wind direction into those three components is important in the next slide or two. The other device with the ball on top of it is an infrared gas analyzer. It measures the CO2 and the amount of water in that parcel of air as it moves through. As I said, it's just a met station. Everything else, we've got a slow response wind sensor, temperature relative humidity, radiometers. Everything's run on solar panels. We don't have the luxury of being close to power systems. And then we've got some below-ground sensors as well, soil heat flux, moisture, and temperature. And all of those are measured, they're polled every 12 seconds, give or take, and then averaged every 15 minutes. But the pieces of instrumentation that are used for the calculation of the fluxes are running at 20 hertz. Okay. So the way eddy covariance works is that we measure what is contained and transported in that eddy, running on the principle of Reynolds averaging. So we take this long calculation, we start to strike things out to simplify it, right? So we want to, we can remove any single primed quantity. We assume that there is a constant density and that our mean of vertical velocity is zero. So magically, this complicated equation is resolved into the calculation of an entity of interest. It can be water, heat, CO2, methane, isoprene, depending on what kind of instrument you have. You can calculate the flux of that entity by measuring just the vertical velocity and that flux, how that measurement at 20 hertz varies from the average over a 30-minute period. Okay. So this is a week's worth of data just to give you a sense of what these look like. They kind of make sense when we'll get into some more details. But the blue is ET, and the green is net ecosystem exchange. So let's look at the blue. So what I want to point out is that, you know, at night there's not a lot going on. During the day we're losing water, and it peaks in the mid-afternoon, early afternoon. NEE is broken into respiration at night, that positive value, imparting CO2 to the atmosphere. And during the day, through photosynthesis, we have a negative value, pulling that CO2 from the atmosphere into the plant. Okay, does that make sense? So now onto our specific study objectives. We looked at a Mid-South production size cotton field with typical practices under current varieties, managed as part of a production farm, and under current environmental conditions. Our aim was to quantify ecosystem respiration and improve our understanding of mechanisms behind these measured changes in respiration. So we're in northeastern Arkansas. This site is part of a Delta Flux network, which is a system of several flux measurement sites in the lower Mississippi Delta. The field is a very large field, about 150 acres. The data I'm going to show you is from 2016 to 2017, just during the harvest season, during the production season. It's center pivot irrigated. The field that we measure is typically in cotton, though it has been in peanuts recently and soybeans and wheat at various times. The soil is a Routon-Dundee crevasse complex. So for the agronomists in the group, Delta Pine 1518, planted in early May, cut out in early August, harvested in October, late October. And you can see the yields here are really good yields. We're super fortunate to work with a phenomenal producer who does things quite well. And these yields are certainly above county averages. So let's get into the meteorology of the system. So we measure a whole bunch of stuff, right? And what I wanted to point out, the most interesting things, you know, generally 2016 and 2017 were similar, okay? There are a couple of points that are a little bit different. The 30-year average for this particular, for the growing season is about 563 millimeters. In 2016, we were slightly above that. In 2017, we were well above that by about 150 millimeters. I want to point out how and when that precipitation came to be, right? So, and this will come into play as we move through some of the flex measurements. Is this right? That I have a minute left? Okay. All right, we've got to move along. So, is that right? Okay. Okay, good. Okay, great. Whew, panicked for a minute. So, one of the things I want to point out in 2017, the very difficult to see light gray bars around 30 days after planting in 2017 in the very bottom panel, we had irrigation early, whereas in 2016 it was a little delayed. We had some precipitation happen around that 20 days after planting, and then what we see in 17, there was more distributed precipitation, but we had some pretty big precipitation events. Air temperature wise, 2017 was slightly cooler than 2016. So post-processing the data, as you might imagine, is a challenge. 20 hertz data gets, you have a lot of data by the end of the season. Our wind direction comes from the south. So we've got this very large 150 acre field. It's about 80 meters long, 800 meters north to south, 400 east to west. And the predominant wind direction is from the south-southwest, so our instrumentation is on the north end of the field. So that wind moves across the field incorporates the characteristics of that field, and then it's measured on the north end of the field. So everything else, when the wind moves from a different direction, that data was removed from the data stream. So we ended up with about 61 to 65% of the data was retained. The flex footprint is just a calculation to verify that what you're measuring is actually coming from the field of interest. And as I said, we've got this big field, and the calculation suggests that 90% of the data comes from within the field itself, from about 338 meters or 344 meters from the tower in 2016 and 2017, respectively. So we're very confident that what we're measuring when it's coming from the appropriate direction is from that, that field. I wanted to point out that this data on the right is radiation. So what we have in Arkansas, you may not have in Arizona, are a lot of clouds. So you can see this, the net solar radiation is at the top, and you can see those deviations from that really nice that nice arc that you would typically get with a peak at about 20 days after planting, and then slowly decline as you move into the summer. We see some deviations, and those are cloudy days, and we'll see some of that as we look at more of the data. Net thermal and the net radiation is on the bottom panel. So looking at net ecosystem exchange, so this is what the instrumentation measures. Daily average is about minus two. The range is from about minus 13 to about 2.5 or 6, depending on the year. These values are real similar to what have been measured in some other studies. I wanted to kind of look at kind of how this plays out through the course of the season. So FS is first square, first flower, and then cutout, just to kind of denote what's happening during the production season. So we can see early on there's not a whole lot going on, right? And then between first square and first flower into cutout, we start to get a lot more activity. Those values start to fluctuate a lot more, more photosynthesis, more activity along from both of those fields in a real consistent manner. Breaking down of net ecosystem exchange into respiration and photosynthesis is shown here. We're going to skip that in the interest of time. But I wanted to look at our eco or ecosystem respiration, and that's the middle panel here. Those values are real consistent from year to year, slightly more respiration coming from 2017, which is a little counterintuitive because it was a bit cooler in 2017. But you can see the deviation from 17 and 16, looking at the middle panel, especially around first square to first flower. We think that that has a lot to do with that initial irrigation and more precipitation, where the plants just started taking off a lot earlier than they did in 16 by comparison. This is an interesting respiration question. So for those of you who are plant physiologists, I'd be interested in talking with you after this. We see this interesting increase around this period of time. It was about a 1.5 to 1.9 times increase in ecosystem respiration. And the thing that we can relate that most closely to is a significant increase in nighttime temperature. So I'm interested in understanding what, from a plant perspective, is going on there. I'd be interested in your comments on that. So we could talk about that maybe offline. Looking at GPP, the average is about 8, give or take. We can see, so now we're looking at the bottom panel. We can see that steady increase in GPP taking off and very related to leaf area index. The most active period is between first flower and just after cutout. We see a real distinct reduction in GPP after defoliation. We also see some sudden decreases in GPP. That's particularly evident around day 99, give or take. And if you recall back to the radiation slide that we talked about, that was a period of time where we had about 3 or 4 days of real cloudy weather. So we can see those the plants responding to the conditions that under which they're trying to grow. ET, as a hydrologist, can't leave a talk without talking a little bit about water. Our ET values on average were about 3.5 millimeters a day. Our peak is about 7.6. Our seasonal values, and this is interesting that when Kelly showed their seasonal ET values of about 1,000 millimeters, we're a little bit more than half of that. So our values are very similar to lysimeter data that was collected in Stoneville, Mississippi, but much smaller than those values that are measured in more arid conditions. Again, that's related to radiation, energy, and humidity. That difference in vapor pressure deficit is, we just don't have that much deficit to overcome. So this is what our evapotranspiration data look like. So in conclusion, respiration, GPP, ET is most active from first flower to just after cutout. We talked a little bit about what influenced those things, radiation being an important one, precipitation and irrigation being another one. We only measure data during the growing season. Our next step is really to look at the annual measurements to try to inform the agricultural carbon budget. We wouldn't be able to do this without the assistance of the farmer that farms this land. Ray Benson is the landowner and our collaborators. If you want to get some more details on this paper, it was just published, just came out yesterday. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them.